This is PID Radio.
Gonna step up to the microphone.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I am Sharon Gilbert, and welcome to the bunker.
Yes, all listeners in the podosphere and all the ships at sea. This is the Tuesday PID Radio, and we thank you for joining us.
We sure do. You know what? I'm happy to be home tonight.
Yeah, you had a busy day today.
I did. I normally spend my day writing, taking care of Watcher Magazine and you know, just sitting around in my jammies, thinking about Krispy Kremes, you know.
It's a tough life, but somebody's got to do it. It takes a lot of work to get your backside into that kind of shape.
Hey, listen, I have a writer's physique.
Seriously,
I do spend my day working on Watcher Magazine and lots of other things, so I'm busy. It's just I'm home. However, today, I was not home. I was doing my civic duty downtown in the county seat of St. Louis County, and I was on a jury.
Juror number 9.
Yeah, well, I was originally juror number 11, and now I've been moved up.
You moved up this week's ranking.
My goal is to make it up to 1 with a bullet. Yeah. No, maybe not with a bullet.
The bad thing was chair number 11 was more comfortable, wasn't it?
It was. I have short legs, and chair number 11 was really very comfortable, and then we switched over to 9, and I don't like it. I'm squee, you know. Well, anyway, I asked the very kind bailiff if he knew a way to fix the chair, but he didn't. So anyway, I'm through that. I have another day tomorrow. We'll continue with the trial and hope it wraps up tomorrow. And I get to come back home and put my jammies back on.
That would be nice.
I know it.
We need to mention a couple of podcasts very quickly.
Oh, yes. You were telling me about
it. First of all, we want to thank Zeph Daniel for having us on his podcast, Channel Z, which we posted a link to at the forum, peeringintodarkness.com/forum. Zeph is an interesting guy. He's a writer, background, comes out of Los Angeles, and has some connections in the show business world, and is now off in the middle of New Mexico, not far from Los Alamos. He claims not to know where that missing 600 pounds of plutonium is, but he had us on his program.
He glows at night, though.
Yeah, he does. And it does some interesting original music, and he had us as a guest. We talked for a little over an hour and had a great time. So we've got a link. We'll post another link in the show notes for today to the Channel Z podcast if you want to take a listen. Interesting guy, and he's always entertaining.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. We had a really good time. Yeah. And the other one you were going to mention.
Well, yeah. One of our regulars at the Peering into Darkness forum, John Wilkerson, who you might remember we interviewed some weeks ago when he was down volunteering at Bay St. Louis in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina.
Had not anything to do with St. Louis, Missouri. This was
Bay St. Louis, Mississippi, which was ground zero.
Oh, Mississippi. That's right. It's not Louisiana, is it?
No. Yeah, Bay St. Louis is just across from New Orleans.
Right. That's why I always think it's part of New Orleans, but it's not. It's in Mississippi. Sorry.
Right.
About that.
Yeah, and they got slammed hard. It was, flattened. And John is an IT guy, a computer geek extraordinaire, and he started a podcast called Homeschool Tech Pilot, which is aimed at homeschoolers and giving them basic advice on how to maximize the use of the computer as a tool. And he's got his first show out, which deals with basic internet security, which is really important, given that there are so many people out there trying to hack into your computer that you don't even know about.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll post a link to his excellent program, Homeschool Tech Pilot, some real good basic tips. Even if you're not homeschooling and you just want some good advice on how to protect yourself so you can practice safe web. And in other shows, we'll deal with other aspects of the use of the computer as a tool.
He could become the Leo Laporte of podcasting for homeschoolers. He just needs to get a bunch of Hawaiian shirts.
That's right.
Or bowling shirts.
Bowling shirts.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, take a look for that. We'll put a link to Homeschool Tech Pilot Podcast in the show notes. And now on to the news.
On to the news. Well, I missed most of the news today, so I've been catching up as I came home. But I did catch this one little tidbit. Apparently, J.P. Morgan is planning on moving most of his company overseas.
Well, thank you so much. We made you rich, and now you're going to go to India.
And what a surprise. Imagine an American company moving things offshore.
Yeah, yeah. And isn't it interesting that this story is featured not in the American press, but in the Hindustan Times?
Yes, because they're very excited about it.
Sure.
India is getting 4,500 new jobs.
Well, for what they're going to hire these guys for, the graduates of Indian colleges will probably be just as qualified as the graduates of American colleges, mm-hmm. and they'll work a lot cheaper. And as you pointed out, because we are moving to a global economy with mm-hmm. everything tied together by high-speed internet, having somebody that's physically in the next room is not as important as just somebody who knows how to use the internet properly.
Amerimexistan.
Yeah. And your point was well made, you know, before the show, that this is because we are moving to a one-world society.
Oh, yeah. You know what? If Jesus doesn't come back before then, I really think 20 years from now, this is going to be a totally different globe.
Yeah.
So don't buy expensive maps, folks.
Just use the 1-to-1 scale map that's right outside your front door.
That's right. And by the way, don't buy maps that are wrapped in plastic. I found a story when I came home from my trial. I wasn't on trial, of course. When I came home from that today, there's a chemical called bisphenol A, and apparently it's part of a lot of plastic packaging that goes on foods. It's bad. Huh. In very, very small quantities, it can cause damage to young brains.
Huh.
Exactly. Apparently, it's very unstable, and it's used to sort of harden the plastic edge.
Uh-huh.
So you have a protective coating, say, on the inside of a milk container.
Oh. Buying your milk in glass bottles is better?
I think so. You know what? We have a local dairy around here that we got our milk from for a while, and it was a little on the pricey side, mm-hmm. but you know what? Now, after reading this, I may call them back and say, we think we'll sign up with you again for home delivery or just start buying it mm-hmm. off the shelf, because there are a couple of stores that carry it, because they sell in glass bottles. And they don't have any growth hormones in their milk.
Right,
so
right.
None of their milk products have growth hormones. So if you have a local dairy or a regional dairy that does something like that, check them out. It's worth a few, you know, it's 50 cents more per gallon or something, a dollar mm-hmm. more per gallon. I can't remember exactly what it was, plus the delivery fee.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's a story that kind of struck me as odd and isn't getting a lot of play in the mainstream press. Sun Myung-moon, the leader and founder
of the new Messiah.
What does he call himself? The Lord of the Second Advent.
Mm.
Yeah, Sun Myung-moon, who's of course the founder of the Moonies, the Unification Church,
uh-huh.
is on tour. He's promoting himself as a world peace advocate, but he's touring with a group of VIPs, among whom is the president's younger brother, Neil Bush. Neil Bush is going along with the Reverend, quote, end quote, Moon as part of a 100-day tour that will hit 100 cities in 67 nations. Okay, this is a pretty big deal. They're pretty far into this, actually, because they're in Manila in the Philippines right now, and this is the 82nd city on their 100-city tour. And Neil Bush... his presence in this group is kind of strange, because Neil Bush isn't exactly known as a highly religious man.
No.
There's some things that came out in his divorce proceedings that I won't go into here that just lead one to believe that, you know, religion doesn't play a real important part in his life.
And you know, to be fair, people can change.
People can change.
So it could be that things that he did in the past, that he has changed and had an enlightening experience, but... Based on what he's doing now, one wonders.
One wonders. See, and here are the other things about Neil, which Jeff Wells brought out at his blog, Rigorous Intuition. Back in April, a story appeared in Newsday, which is a New York newspaper, that Neil Bush and Cardinal Ratzinger, back in 1999, were part of a group that founded an ecumenical foundation in Geneva, Switzerland. There were a few other, you know, well-known religious figures, Prince Hassan of Jordan... the former chief rabbi of France, a Muslim dedicated to, a prominent Muslim, Prince Sadruddin Aga Khan. I'm probably mispronouncing his name. And a Greek Orthodox leader, Metropolitan Damaskinos. So, I mean, they had a number of different denominations and faiths represented as a part of this group called the Foundation for Interreligious and Intercultural Research and Dialogue. And their goal was apparently to promote ecumenical understanding, interfaith relationships, and so forth. But according to what I was able to find out about this organization, they hardly ever had any money, and it's not really certain that they ever accomplished much of anything. Hmm. But it was significant that you had a member of the Bush family and the former and the future Pope of the Roman Catholic Church as part of the group that founded this interfaith organization. And Neil Bush has also worked as a lobbyist for the Church of Scientology.
He's a seeker-friendly guy. He's trying to figure out where to go.
I guess. Now, this is from 2002. So in 99, he was part of this interfaith group. In 2002, he's working for Scientology. And now in 2005, he's touring with the Reverend Moon of this Unification Church promoting world peace.
What's next? Neil Bush Bear?
Could be.
Remember now, Billy Beer?
I remember Billy Beer.
I know we already have a sort of.
I'm not sure what was worse, that or the BCCI deal that the Neil Bush was involved with, the savings and loan collapse.
Yes.
It Silverado or? Well, I have to do some more digging into that.
Yes, it's something like that. We'll have to dig on that. But also remember the Billy thing. Wasn't it Gaddafi that he was cozying up to during his brother's presidency? I'll have to look back on that, but there was some scandalous appearance.
The younger brother.
Of course, there's Roger Clinton,
who was an embarrassment too. So, but here's something interesting.
So here, if you want to run for president, take a hard look at your siblings.
Younger brothers. Yeah, if you got a younger brother, just make sure they're out of the country forever. There was an interesting little side note to this. Sun Myung-moon has a problem with the cross because he considers it a divisive symbol. And so he tells his followers, you know, in Christian churches to take down the crosses, take down the symbol of Christianity.
Do you remember,
this was a little reported story, but do you remember that for the inaugural parade this year in Washington, D.C., 2005, the White House at first issued a ban on crosses. They didn't want any crosses displayed in the parade. And after Christian groups complained, they backed off and changed the policy. But they weren't going to allow crosses to be displayed. And you just have to wonder now, because Papa Bush, George Sr., has been a real buddy-buddy of Reverend Moon for a long time also.
Oh, yeah, and let us not forget that he was crowned.
Mm-hmm.
By some Washington upper echelon folks.
Members of Congress, senators and congressmen, back in March of this year, right.
They put a robe around his shoulders and a crown on his head.
Very strange. We'll need to do a show on Sun Myung-moon at some point because his influence in Washington is very powerful, but it's very quiet.
I have to say that it also creeps into evangelical Christianity.
It does. There are a number of very prominent evangelical Christians who are very tight with Sun Myung-moon, and we're probably spending more time on this story than I thought. But
we are. We're going to have to go to our guest because we have a fascinating interview with Stan Deo that you just have to hear on the Tower of Babel.
Right.
It's going to curl your hair.
It will, because we started on the Tower of Babel, and it leads into some other areas, and so you just need to pay close attention.
Right. You know, we just better just go right to Stan because we don't want people to miss any of this.
We're pleased to have back with us by telephone Stan Deo, author, researcher, archaeologist of some note, and all-around adventurous guy.
Renaissance man.
Yes, by telephone to talk about Stargates, the Tower of Babel, and various and assorted other things. Stan, thank you for joining us again on PID Radio.
Thank you for having me, guys. It's good to talk to you again. And by the way, my name really isn't Stan Da Vinci, but...
I thought that portrait looked familiar.
The Deo name is much more noble.
When I was predicting, I'm still predicting earthquakes with the data we've got, but there was a while there I had to start telling people, look, I'm just doing this scientifically. I'm not using psychic powers and that kind of junk. And I said, don't call me Nostradeo anymore. So
we're going to have to get you a theme song.
Yeah, that would be cool.
The banana boat song, that'll do.
I'm sure you hear that one a lot.
Yeah,
I do.
Oh, God.
Well, Stan, one of our listeners had asked us about the Tower of Babel, sent us a note, suggested that might be something to talk about. And so we're kind of taking a couple of looks at it. The history we'll talk about with author Peter Goodgame. But we heard you interviewed by Steve Quayle on his radio program a couple of weeks back.
Right
after that patent was announced for the gentleman who had in Indiana for the anti-gravity device.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I guess the talk of space-time curvature and whatnot led to discussions of portals and dimensional portals. What do you think would have prompted God to come down to Earth and intervene at the Tower of Babel to stop construction?
Well, it's interesting because in that account in the Hebrew, in fact, I think in the King James translation as well, when Nimrod is building the Babel Tower, by the way, in the Mideastern dialect, Babel is gateway of God.
Okay.
Right.
That's what that means. It's not the Tower of Confusion. It's Bab, door, and El, God, for mm-hmm. like Elohim. Anyway, when he was building that, he was building a ziggurat-type structure, which had, it was probably square sectioned at the base, like a pyramid, but it had steps going all the way around it in a winding spiral up to the top.
Mm-hmm.
It could have been a round one. There's discussion whether it was round or square, but basically it was conic shape going up many stories. And he was building this to access the gods, in essence, the doorway to the gods. Now you think, well, a tall building, well, they could have gotten a tall mountain and done the same thing. Why did this tall building make any difference?
Yeah.
In the Hebrew it says, let us go down and just, you know, knock it down, lest they climb up here and become as one of us.
Right.
Now, there's a stele I have from the area that I've taken off the internet, some very nice high-resolution photos of it, which shows Marduk, an ancient king in the area there, standing at the base of a ziggurat, and there are other people climbing up underneath him who have been thrown off or killed or whatever from the power of the gods underneath this ziggurat. And it's an old, well-worn stele, but up at the top of it, I put it through Photoshop and changed the contrast, and I could find at the very apex of it was a circular or spherical thing, because it was done in two dimensions, I can't tell either way, but it was glowing, a big circular ring-looking thing that was glowing. And in some of the translations from that period, we find that they built the ziggurats to allow the gods to come through from where they come through with a lot of energy and a burst of light at the top, and then walk around slowly, and they even put food stations at various places down the long walk down for the gods to sit and refresh themselves while they were discharging energy so they wouldn't hurt anybody. So it sounds for all the world like a stargate, but one that has to be high enough above the dirt not to short out, you know, to electricity to ground.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And I think from what I can, from reading other portions of Hebrew and Chaldean-type stories, that the area that they came from is not like another star system per se out, you know, in some direction you could point a finger, but from right around us in a parallel universe that exists right where we are, but on like a different matter wave, if you wish.
Mm-hmm.
The portal, the gateway, would open up between our world and the parallel universe, which is all around us. And there are many parallel universes, we think, at least seven that the scriptures speak of, around Earth.
Like the seventh heaven.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, exactly.
Okay.
We try to relate everything that we discuss on this to biblical documentation so that we don't drift too far off of what the truth is.
Right.
So I do think that in Iraq, Iran, somewhere in that area, perhaps at Basra, I won't go into the discussions too long on that, but that there might have been a gateway ziggurat in that area. And there may well be again in the near future, like in the next year or two, because I'm certain that they're going to make the announcement here very shortly on the alien presence and the cover-up officially.
Do you see any connection between that and the abyss where the strong angel comes down with a key?
Well, it's possible. It's possible. I know that area of the planet has a thin crust there.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the bottomless pit that he opens, a bottomless pit, if you try to visualize that as a normal pit, you can't. But if you visualize the inside of a hollow sphere, that is bottomless. There is no bottom.
Well, sure. Okay.
Yeah.
So I think that, yes, that does tie in quite closely with that. Sorry, go on.
No, I think Sharon was alluding to some of the information we discussed with Peter Goodgame in the location of the ancient temple to the god Enki, which was called the Abzu, or the Abyss, was located in that area at the ancient city of Eridu, which the Sumerians remembered as the very first city, which, of course, biblically would be the city that was built for Cain, or by Cain, rather, for his son Enoch. And interestingly, Enoch's son was named Irad, I-R-A-D, which is very similar to Eridu, Eridu.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have looked at that, too. I'm not sure that my view on it is correct, but when I found the Garden of Eden in the Scriptures, being modern-day the Danakil Plains east of Ethiopia, when all the land masses of Indian stuff were together, the Indus Valley, river valley, connected to the Persian Gulf.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, not to the Persian Gulf, to the Red Sea near the Danakil Plains. And there I found evidence of Cain's migration eastward there,
uh-huh.
directly eastward, because the Garden of Eden was down there, eastward into the Indus River Valley and up to a town now called, it's been built up many times, called Shalkot, which we think was Enoch's city because it changed name several times. But
okay.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. Either place is fine. But I do think that from a number of things that I've heard from people in the Pentagon, that the buzzword in the Secret of Secrets in the Pentagon is the Sumerian gods are returning. And that's what they're referring to, is that whole area that Peter
said. Wow.
Can you repeat that again, just in case anybody missed it? The buzzword
in the Pentagon, in the, you know, the military circles that are in the know about the cover-up here, they kind of, in whispered tones, talk about the return of the Sumerian gods. And they're talking about the what we would call aliens or fallen angels returning into the Middle East, into old Sumer area.
The Anunnaki.
Well, could be.
Under the ancient names.
Yeah. Do you think that has anything to do with why we're in Iraq?
Possibly.
Because I know that there are people out there that have conjectured that one of the reasons we went in there, and I'm not saying I buy this, but I think it's intriguing, is that one of the reasons we went in was to raid the museum, to get artifacts out.
Well, I've heard that, and I know the artifacts were taken to safety by someone, but I think probably the major motivations were strategic placement in the Middle East over the growing potential for an alliance between the Arab Muslim nations there. Since the Balfour Declaration, since the end of World War One, when Great Britain repartitioned the Middle East, they drew lines into territorial borders that they shouldn't have, and they did it on purpose so that one tribe would be against another tribe or one country against the other because they had land that didn't belong to them, but it was given to them by the British.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole idea behind that British foreign policy there was to destabilize the Middle East so that we didn't have a rising threat from the predominantly Muslim population there because they'd be too busy fighting themselves. They couldn't get together.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now then you've got a new leader coming up in Iran, a young, strong force that is going to he's already making talk about unifying the Arab Muslim nations against Israel and the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Totally destroy Israel and also to wound the heck out of us because we support them and have half the Jewish population in New York.
Right.
So I think what we're trying to do is to hold a military foothold or presence there legitimately in Iraq or the Middle East to try to defend ourselves against the United Arab effort. I don't think it will work, but I think that was one of the major factors. And it was not so much to secure oil in the area, because what is probably not known by your listeners is when I was working for the guys, Sir John and Edward Teller and Henry Somerset and those people, they controlled governments. They told leaders what to do. This was the Illuminati people speak up. And they told me that the reason they were keeping a lot of the technology back and not using the Western oil was that they wanted to deplete the Middle Eastern Arab oil fields, so they had nothing left to barter with. They wanted to break them, so they couldn't buy weapons, they couldn't organize and get high tech. Obviously, this has failed, but that was what they started 40, 50 years ago. It was an extension of the Crusades, Western Judeo-Christian nations going against the Muslim nations in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of oil, a huge amount of oil, capped off in Australia and in the North Sea, a number of places over the planet. And when I say we, I mean the Western nations. And a lot of it primarily U.S. Finance stuff. But it's been capped off, not to be used, and it will only be used for fuel as a transition in their plan once a global government set up so that inequities can be legislated immediately, you know, to make life bearable for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to transition over the next 30, 40 years after that into a non-petroleum, non-combustible, non-fossil fuel type power source for cars, aircraft, and the home. But they had to have complete control of the planet to do it without creating a huge disparity between nations and increasing the likelihood for war. This is their altruistic view. And that's why I think they allowed the oil fields to burn for a while before they put them out when they went into Gulf War I.
Okay.
That's interesting.
Okay. Interestingly, you know, you were talking about the glowing orb at the top of the ziggurat and that the stele that you have. And I'm looking at the back of my dollar bill and seeing the Masonic symbol there with the eye, the all-seeing eye with the glowing circle or orb around it. Do you think that that was inspired by the ancient Stargate or whatever it was?
Gosh, you know, I'd never thought about it, Derek, but it does sound like it could have been. It has. It's in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
It's glowing, and it's the eye of God. Well, yeah, I guess it could be.
Hmm.
That's an interesting observation.
Well, I just it just occurred to me. I hadn't thought about that before. Because I've heard you mention the stele before, but it never occurred to me until just now. The reason we mentioned the fellow with his anti-gravity device and the Stargate technology, the portal, you mentioned an incident that occurred while you were in Australia, down in Fremantle, with a fellow who asked for your help on some of this technology. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. At that time, that's going back about, I guess, 20 years, I had my work had become fairly well known across Australia. My books having sold the equivalent of a billion seller here down there, and
wow,
in there I had a section on Nikola Tesla in the Cosmic Conspiracy book, and I had done a number of public lectures on it. And somewhere in one of those public lectures, I think I had mentioned the fact that I had built a coil, a toroidal coil, you know, for anti-gravity test, which I had done back in Dallas before we went to Australia. And it had bent the light in the room around and burned out. And I discussed a bit more how I did it in the taped interview, lecture. And this guy down in Fremantle, which is about a 45-minute drive south through traffic from Perth in Western Australia, he lived down there, and he rang me up one day. He said, "Oh, look, my name is whatever it was." And he says, "Look, I wonder if you come help me with a problem I've got on a Tesla coil. I'm building some toroidal coils here, and they don't seem to be working right." And I said, "Well, I'll do it if I can, you know." I said, where are you located? And he told me the address. And so he says, "Just wait outside. It's kind of a warehouse that I live in, and I'll come open the big door for you." I said, "Okay, fine." So I suspicioned something was weird there, and so I called a friend of mine, Kim. I said, "Kim, I've got a live turkey on the line here that's wanting to help him with his toroidal coil. I don't know him from Adam, and it's like meeting at a big warehouse next to the docks there, you know."
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And, you know, you can just see X-Files all over this.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
So I said, "All right, then will you come down with me?" He said, "Yeah." So we got in the car and drove down, and we parked outside this, you know, big, old, ancient brick warehouse that had been there for probably 100 years at least, serving the ships coming in, closed up. But we parked where we were supposed to, and we knocked on this big door, you know, one of these sliding red wood-type doors. And sure enough, up he comes, and he rolls. It opened to let us come in, and he said, oh, hi. I said, oh, this is my friend, Kevin. Oh, okay, and so we come in. He closes again, locks it up, and takes us into the center, into this kind of darkened warehouse, and in the middle of it there, on the left side, there was this his office research area where he built his coils and stuff, and it was kind of fenced off with, you know, partitions, but you could see over the top of it. So we went in, and he said, oh, here's this Tesla coil I've been building, and he had built a wonderful Tesla coil. I mean, it was one of the best ones I've seen. It was perfectly tuned, you know, gave nice singing arcs off the top and everything. And I said, well, that is amazing. I said, you know, show me how you did it. And I said, oh, yeah, well, that capacitor there, that's the way to solve that problem. That's good. Excellent. He said, now, here's my real problem. He took us back over to another table. And here was this thing about the size of a pizza pan and, you know, a big pizza. But laying there about that diameter was this coil that looked like a big donut, if you wish. And the donut part of it that you would bite into was about 3 inches in diameter. And the hole in the middle of it was the rest of the pizza pan. And he had wrapped two or three coils of wire around this donut in different angles to each other and was trying to pulse a resonant circuit through it like he did with the Tesla coil. And he said, you know, I heard that you built one of these. And I said, yeah, mine was slightly different, but the same principle. And I said, you know, mine, I don't know whether I'm going to be much help. I said, because mine, when I fired it, I got nauseous instantly, and the light from the room around me seemed to be painted on saran wrap or, you know, like plastic wrap, and it just pulled into the center of the coil like the whole room was just sucked into it, but it wasn't. It's just the light, I said, and then it burned out, and I couldn't get it to work again. He said, well, now, that's what interests me. He said, I had the same thing happen with this coil here, and I can't get it to work again. So I built another coil, and I put it here on the table. I couldn't get it to work. I moved it across the room, and it worked, and then it burned out. Then it wouldn't work again. He said, that's what I'm trying to figure out. So we're sitting here talking all this, and my friend Kim is circling behind this guy, looking over his desk and papers and things, just being a bit nosy. And he lifted a calendar off the wall a bit with his finger very quietly, and there was Hebrew written behind it.
Huh.
Kim gave me the nod back here, and he says, you know, with his eyebrows, look what I'm going to show you. And so he moved that, and I did a quick glance, and the word for sword in Hebrew was hanging right down, you know, vertically behind his calendar. So then Kim went around moving some other things, and there was Hebrew written under other things hidden in the room. So Kim says to the guy, look, if you got a toilet, look, we've been here so long, you know, I just got to go. So the guy says, oh, yeah, all right, well, just stick to where I tell you. Go down that hallway down there and turn left, and, you know, and he gave him instructions through this dark factory, and so Kim wanders off. So this guy and I continued to talk. I knew Kim was wanting to go nose around, see what else was out there.
Mm-hmm.
He comes back with his eyes as big as saucers, and he says, well, I guess you better take a leak, too, you know, because, you know, nod. And I said, look, here, you guys talk for a second. I guess I got to go, too, you know, I went off. And when I went past Kim, he said, look in the room on your right. And so I went on down there, and the room on the right was this big kind of square room, you know, completely sealed off except for a doorway that was locked, and there was a glass window about maybe 8 inches square in it. And I looked in there. And yeah, I'll tell you what, my jaw nearly hit the floor. There was a big goat's head with horns like the Satan symbol up on the wall over a throne, you know, a throne chair. And on the floor was the big circle, you know, with the pentagram and stuff in it and candles. Oh. And they weren't going at the moment. But, and, you know, all that devil stuff that you want to see was inside there. And it suddenly dawned on me. I thought, this guy's up to no good. And I went down to the restroom thing like I was going to, and I saw stairwells down into the lower quarters. So I went and made the do stop and came back. And I said to this guy, I said, hey, I couldn't help but notice you have a basement here. He said, oh, those are the old cellars where they used to kind of use them to store stuff and some little jail cells and things down there. And I thought, right, this guy is trying to gate beings through with his coil. That's what he's up to. So we excused ourselves as politely as we could a little bit thereafter and left. But he was actively, as a Satanist or whatever, trying to open the gateway to a parallel world, whether it be the underworld or levels above us, I don't know, but it was not for good.
So this system that he was building was basically just a big electromagnetic coil or device that he thought would open that a doorway between our universe and then one of these parallel universes.
Yeah, and I don't know how he got to that conclusion from what documents he was reading, whatever, but he had studied Kabbalah Mm-hmm. And all I can assume is he may have derived it from some of that. anyway, it was spooky. We actually couldn't wait to get out of there, you know.
And we presume that you didn't really help him all that much.
No, we didn't.
Okay.
Good for you.
Wow. Yeah, it's mind-blowing. It really is. That here we've got guys who are trying to use modern technology combined with, one would presume that the words on the walls were some sort of spell or something that he was trying to invoke or cast or something, or did you not get enough of a look to really get a sense for what he was trying to do?
I couldn't do it, no.
Yep.
I am aware of that, but his... He was just a scaly character, and I knew from seeing what I did see that it was stuff that had been used in ritual magic before, or, you know, witchcraft, that sort of stuff. But anyway, it's I didn't want to know anymore.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Well, the thing that we wanted to convey to listeners is that this stuff is out there and it does exist.
It does. Now, yeah. Now, Stan, this is different. You're talking about this. Coming through a dimensional portal,
yeah.
That would be different than, say, conjuring up a demon, quote unquote, in some sort of occult ritual, right?
I don't know, because I don't know what they'd use in the ritual.
I haven't personally done it. I try not to do those things. In fact, I just assume they not come through. But
yeah,
I was just thinking if maybe there are demons that are actually in our world, and then there are others that are fallen angels maybe that are in another dimension, and they have to come through a different way. I was thinking in particular about the Babylon working that was done by Jack Parsons.
I don't know that or about his work, but... if you go back to about the angel going down, unlocking the abyss to let him out, that's an underworld, a dimension beneath us in energy. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
A lot of people over the ages have reported that ghosts, when they appeared in the room with them, lowered the temperature of the room.
Yes, that's a very common
true.
Observation, right?
That's
well,
true.
Well, as the energy density decreases in the under parallel universe, in other words, it's less energy per square centimeter or cubic centimeter.
Right.
If they open a gateway into our world, they suck energy out of our world into theirs because they're cooler than we are.
Oh,
sure.
Okay.
And if you go the other way and you look at, like, Enoch's visions and various of the other Old Testament visions where they've seen God appear in the heavens and come down, it's always attended by fire and smoke because they're more energetic as they come into our world.
Right, okay.
And that's why the stele was there when they went through a portal instead of gating through with a sled device. You know, the portal had to de-energize as you came down. Why not, you know, when Moses is up on Mount Sinai, he says to God, look, I hate to be intrusive, but I'd like to see what you look like. And he says, well, don't come any closer. I'm going to direct you into this cleft of the mountain here, and I'm going to pass by in a cloud, and you can see my shadow.
Mm-hmm.
The reason was, if he got too close, because God was glorified or energized, appearing from his level of the heavens, he was so energized that his energy would just destroy Moses' body.
It would have burned up, sure.
Yeah. So
and when Moses came down, his face was glowing.
Well, he glowed for several days. He had to hide his face from everybody.
Yeah.
And that's why.
So then theoretically, Stan, we could say that it's possible hell has frozen over? If they're on
I like it. I've had your cup of coffee this morning. Oh, dear.
Well,
yeah.
Stan, thank you so much for sharing this. These stories. I mean, and I don't mean stories from the standpoint of fictional stories, but I mean your experiences. Let's put it that way. And your knowledge. It's really an education. And boy, what we wouldn't give for an opportunity to just sit down over dinner sometime and just pick your brain.
Yeah.
We don't mean that in a cannibalistic way either. We're just not into that anymore.
Good. Looking for me. All right, well, we'll do it again then.
Yeah, all right, Stan. Thank you very much. Stan Dale, thank you for being with us on PID Radio.
Thank you.
God bless, Stan.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Okay, honey, get the fire extinguisher because my hair is on fire.
And mine's just curled.
I know. Mine's sizzling because, I think I need to come down, just slowly
wind down.
That's that wind down thing where it comes from. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Stan Dale is always fascinating, and he's got a mind that just encompasses so much.
Don't you wonder where, I mean, God is doing such a work in so many people, and just, well, it's funny that the all-encompassing descriptive word that we use for those who are siding with the enemy is the Illuminati.
Mm-hmm.
But it's those who actually serve God who are truly the enlightened ones.
That is so true. Well, we're going to continue with the Tower of Babel theme for the next couple of days. We've been talking up an author by the name of Peter Goodgame for a couple of days now, and mm-hmm. we've kind of rearranged our schedule a couple of times as we try to figure out how best to work this weekday format. But Peter Goodgame will be our guest tomorrow and on Thursday, and he will discuss the history of the Tower of Babel and the movement of the people groups in the ancient Near East and how the Tower of Babel incident influenced later Egyptian mythology.
You don't
and how
miss it.
That has influenced the occult all the way up to present day.
You know, we got good stuff in store for you. And if you have not considered what you're going to be doing on June 2nd, 3rd, and 4th of next year, give us a thought, because here in St. Louis, we're having a PidCon.
Yep. We're
not a pig roast.
No. Peering into darkness, and the idea is to explore the topics that we talk about on this program. We're not trying to sensationalize anything. We're just trying to examine things in the full light of truth. And some of these things that are hidden now are in the darkness because very powerful forces want them there.
Mm-hmm.
We believe, and because we believe that there are too many of us who walk around with our eyes closed. We don't want to know, we don't want to see, or we don't want to have to think too hard about these things that really don't matter anyway. Don't we have enough to worry about just putting food on the table? Don't we have enough to worry about wondering whether or not the Bears are going to win the soup? I mean, putting food on the table. But seriously, there are things that if you discuss in public, people think you are a loon.
Oh, yeah.
But there is hard data for these things taking place, the types of the topics that we've discussed here.
You know, I think most people really are going through life like the title of that that movie that Tom Cruise was in,
Eyes Wide Shut.
And when I first heard that title, I thought, well, that's an intriguing title, and what the heck does that mean? But you know, it's all about the whole mind control thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't had a chance to see the movie yet, and I understand that there are some scenes in it that really are objectionable for most people, and probably,
right.
frankly, we just assume they may not be in there. But I think that, from what I understand, that the mind control aspect of it is really worth taking a look at.
Yep.
So we'll try to, you know, preview that thing for you.
Right. But that's the idea. I mean, the whole point is to show that there is really nothing in this world that cannot be, that cannot fit into the Christian
mm-hmm.
worldview.
That's right.
I mean, if you're a Christian and you truly believe in what you say, then you should not be afraid or intimidated to examine anything in light of what you claim to believe.
That's right, and that's what we are all about at Peering Into Darkness. If you want to talk to us or give us any advice or suggest a future guest, please write to us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. In the meanwhile, I'm Sharon Gilbert.
I'm Derek Gilbert. Thanks for listening to PID Radio.
Bye-bye.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear.